590 The Fan.
We're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Day after trade deadline, breaking it all down, deciphering how we can evaluate what the Blue Jays did and didn't do. We're going to bring in Jeff Blair, our insider, that's brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Co-host of Blair and Barker, Sportsnet.ca columnist Jeff Blair. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good. You're driving in. We're going to see you quite soon. And I know you guys had a busy day yesterday. Let's just start with a trade deadline grade for the Toronto Blue Jays.
I'm not a big fan of going, you know, minuses, like B minus or anything like that. I mean, to me, if you're going to give someone a C minus, I would have been a horrible teacher. If I was going to give someone a C minus, I would say, nah, that's a D, because that's not good enough to be a C. But in this case, I would give Ross Atkins and the Blue Jays, I would give them a C minus, because they did, I think, my opinion, I think he did the bare minimum. And that was to get a couple of bullpen arms in that could go into the bullpen right away and be better than who they were replacing. And they've done that without question. Anthony Bass and Zach Pop, I mean, pick a name, Trevor Richards, Trent Thornton, whoever. I mean, they're better than what the Jays had going into the deadline. Good enough to make a difference? Yeah, that's where I have a difficult time sort of upgrading it from anything other than a C minus, because I'm not certain as much of an improvement as they will be. And listen, who knows? Zach Pop could be Clay Holmes. I mean, when the Yankees got Clay Holmes last year from the Pittsburgh Pirates, nobody thought anything about it. And this guy has turned into one of the game's dominant relievers. Went to the All-Star game. You know, you could make the case that he not single-handedly has saved the Yankees' bullpen. He's certainly given them depth that they may otherwise not have suspected. So maybe Zach Pop turns into Clay Holmes. You got a power sinker. That should play. But I look at this team as a team that should be competing for the American League championship. And I'm sure folks in Seattle feel that way about their team. I'm sure folks in New York certainly feel that way. I'm sure folks in Houston feel that way. Some people in Boston may feel that way. Folks in Minnesota, maybe they feel that way. All of those teams did more to make themselves better than the Blue Jays did. And that, you know, for that reason, I think the trade deadline, if you're going 50% as a pass, I'd go maybe 45%. I don't think that Ross Atkins did enough.
Yeah, I gave them a C-minus as well when we started the show. I like everything that you just said. Yeah, you look at Pop and you say, yeah, that could be something. And you mentioned that that pitch. He's thrown it now almost 85% of the time, which is quite a bit. He doesn't really walk people now, but you know what else he doesn't do? He doesn't strike people out. He's not a guy that you're expecting to be in leverage this year. Same thing with Anthony Bass. It's a better season, but yeah, if you have the bases loaded, or you need a strikeout, you need some runners on, you need a punch out in a playoff game, and he's your second best reliever, I'm not sure what that says about the state of your bullpen. I'm not really sure what Whit Merrifield is at this point in his career, given the OPS. There are some indicators that say that he might be a little unlucky, but it's not, you know, over the top or anything. He's still unvaccinated, and so it's going to be at least 2 weeks before he can play in Canada. We'll see how many games he's able to even play for the Blue Jays down the stretch here. Yeah, I think that a lot of people were disappointed. And so when you look at that as a whole, right, where you say, hey, you don't think that Ross Atkins did enough, what do you think happened? Do you think that this was a case of the front office actually being too conservative, that there were deals to be made for the Blue Jays, or do you view this as most of baseball looked at what they had in their prospect pile beyond their top three guys, and they kind of said, you know what, we can get a better offer, and they decided to turn to other teams.
Yeah, I think that's the latter. I think the latter's true. And I think also the Jays were very clear that they weren't going to trade Ricky Tiedemann in anything. And I'm okay with that. Just based on what I've heard from people, based on people who've seen him pitch, based on people, other organizations who've seen him pitch, this guy could be Alek Manoah. So I'm fine with Ross Atkins saying, we'll talk about anybody but Ricky Tiedemann. I'm completely okay with that. But it does, I think, JD, to your point, you know, it at least indicates, when you look at the deals that were made, it at least indicates that the Blue Jays value their prospects differently than the rest of the industry does, or they place a higher value on it. And that may be because, you know, there may be... The Jays have talked about wanting to maintain a window of opportunity and wanting to sort of have this assembly line of prospects rolling off. And they've always talked about that. And I think every time they go out to sign a Jose Berríos or a George Springer or a Kevin Gausman, we kind of lose sight of the fact that there's sort of two trains of development here, right? There's the actual organizational ethos, which is controllable players, you know, extending your window of opportunity, things of that nature. And then there's the financial might of ownership, which allows you to go out and buy a free agent. And maybe we kind of conflate the two. You know, just because the Jays go out and sign Kevin Gausman to this contract, therefore they're willing to blow up the farm system in order to get Luis Castillo. The two don't always go hand in hand. And they're not the only organization that looks that way. I guarantee you they're having the same discussion in Detroit right now. I mean, they're looking at that bullpen and going, guys, you know, you spent 2 months telling us that everybody was falling all over themselves for Gregory Soto and Joe Jimenez and Will Vest, and you moved Michael Fulmer. So I think that's kind of the nut of the issue here. And, you know, I think it was only reinforced. It's not that this is a conservative organization, because, you know, they traded Gunnar Hoglund for Matt Chapman. They traded Austin Martin and Simeon Wood Richardson for Jose Berríos. So they will, you know, they will trade their prospects in the right move. But, you know, I think what we're seeing here this year is that this organization has not done a very good job when it comes to its depth. I mean, look at AAA.
Yeah.
Look at AAA. Where is a starting pitcher that will come up from AAA and even do a half-ass job filling in for, I don't know, Alek Manoah if he needs to miss a start, or somebody, if God forbid, they get COVID. You know, where is that guy? Well, it was Max Castillo. He was traded. Clearly, nobody likes Thomas Hatch or Anthony Kay.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what I'm getting at. This is, I think, more than anything else, a reflection of the fact that the Jays minor league system, you know, we get carried away, I think, a lot of times, looking at these guys and following what they're doing at AA and all this, and, oh, my God, this is great. You know, yep. Keep in mind that it may look good on video, but other organizations may look at it and go, eh, we can do better.
Well, to be honest, I actually think that it's one of the most, I don't want to say underrated storylines of the season, but maybe one of the more underappreciated storylines of the season is that, yeah, the AAA depth. Because they should have arms that could come up and supplement their starting pitching, and they should have arms that are swing and miss of the bullpen at this level, right? When you're talking about waves and different things that this organization is supposed to have, it's like they don't have really any depth that's there at AAA. And I've seen people point out...
Think about this. They went out and acquired Bradley Zimmer and Zach Collins.
Exactly.
They acquired them.
Yeah.
Think about that. What does that tell you? That you don't have that in your organization? You're picking up other organization scraps.
Exactly. And so I just I think that for them this year, for a team, for a front office that has, you know, I know that maybe the extent of this was over exaggerated or whatever, but that they came in here and said they were mad that the cupboards were empty. For them to be this empty at AAA in a year where they're supposed to be World Series contenders, it's obviously hurt them in two ways. One, that they haven't been able to promote people to supplement their depth, and two, now heading into the deadline where you're supposed to be able to make trades that remove from that group that nobody wanted any of their guys, that they're number four or number five, depending on how you looked at it from whatever angle, is like the second lowest slugging percentage in his level of baseball right now in Jordan Groshans. You go beyond that. I had routinely asked people this week, you know, where do you rank the Jays prospects and where do you rank them? And it routinely came in from 20 and below. And that is with a guy like Ricky Tiedemann, who some people now believe is even higher than Gabriel Moreno in terms of his value. Like, they're clearly stacked at the very top, and the rest of the organization seems to be really thin. And I guess, yeah, sure, they've promoted some guys, and people have made that point too, but, like, find me the organization that hasn't promoted players, right? Like, that's how this works.
Right.
You take guys, and they end up on your major league roster. People shouldn't be looking at, like, they're like, wow, one of their first-round picks, Manoah's on the team. I'm like, yeah, that's sports. Like, you draft guys, you develop guys. Some of them end up on your big league roster. I guess, what do you think there should be in terms of level of criticism for this group, given, again, like, that they are two guys that pride themselves on their ability to draft, develop, and foster prospects?
Well, I think we're kind of looking at it in a vacuum right now. They have done a good job of that. Bo and Vladdy, now, I know people are saying, Jeff, come on, Vladdy, you could have drafted Vladdy and had him develop.
You could have.
As a prospect.
We all saw that video of him hitting home runs at 16.
The point is, yeah, but you know what? The point is, it happened. There have been times where we've seen really highly touted prospects who haven't been able to develop. So I don't think it's a condemnation of the front office, but I think it's a reflection that maybe their philosophy is not in keeping with an organization that should be looking at winning a World Series every year. That it not in keeping is the wrong phrase. And maybe the two don't necessarily work. The two don't necessarily work hand in hand, I guess is the way I would put it. Now, having said that, Alek Manoah got to the majors in a hurry. Ricky
yep.
Tiedemann will be up at Double A. He could be in the majors next year. That would be quick. So you have to be a little careful, because if you go around this diamond, they've done a pretty good job making calls on their players. They held on to Danny Jansen. They showed patience with him. He wasn't one of their guys, right? He's from the Alex organization. They got Santiago Espinal. They got Lourdes Gurriel Jr. They developed him. Of course, Vladdy and Bo. Santiago Espinal. Somebody in the organization had to look at the Boston Red Sox and go, you know what? That's the guy we want in the Steve Pierce deal. So you do have to kind of, you know, keep it in mind that it doesn't mean that the organization's made this series of miscalculations. But I think it has to at least raise questions about the depth of the player development system and whether that's a, you know, simply the result of a philosophical thing that is a little out of whack compared to the rest of baseball. I don't know, but again, the Jays clearly don't have enough prospects to move the needle with a lot of teams to get a deal done, or they just think, you know, they think all of their prospects are gold and they're not willing to part with any of them, which to me is silly.
Yeah. How do you think that impacted the Soto sweepstakes? Because, you know, you were the guy that reported their interest in Ramirez, and I just looked at Soto and said, so wait, you can get a better version of Jose Ramirez, like a younger version where you get three runs at him. And granted, I know that there was a lot of discussion around Bo Bichette, maybe the idea that the Nationals were so early in their development, or that they wanted such a hardcore teardown that they weren't even interested in a player like that who did only have the one extra year of control. But how do you think the Jays approached the Soto, and do you think that it really did come down to the Padres just had better versatility of prospects and positions that lined up better?
Yeah, I think the Padres had better prospects. I don't believe the Jays did anything other than make a phone call. I think it was pretty clear from the start where the three teams that were going to be in play for Juan Soto. I mean, once the Yankees once all those fantasies about the Yankees getting involved, then it kind of fell by the wayside. It was pretty clear he was going to go to he was going to go to L.A. I don't even know about St. Louis, because I never really thought St. Louis would move Dylan Carlson, but he was either going to go to L.A. or San Diego. That's a perfect perfect reflection of the state of the Jays minor league system. I mean, San Diego has spent 2 years trading for guys and getting rid of guys and getting rid of minor leaguers and bringing in guys, and they still had enough in the tank to go out and get a 23-year-old who's already on a Hall of Fame path. What does that tell you about the Jays minor league system? Clearly it wasn't as good, or it wasn't as attractive, and it certainly wasn't as deep as San Diego's. So, yeah, and I know other people will say, well, Jeff, other teams, similar position, right? Clearly LA's system wasn't as deep as San Diego's. I really do think that at the end of the day, the St. Louis Cardinals were the only team that really matched up better than San Diego, because they do have Dylan Carlson and they have Nolan Gorman, who, has got a lot of service time left. So, yeah, I don't think the Jays didn't have the players to get that done. And, Washington doesn't need a catcher. They've got Kevin Ruiz, so that took Gabriel Moreno off the table. The Jays they were never in the discussions. They didn't have a prayer getting Juan Soto.
So the guy who I think says the most name recognition that they get, Whit Merrifield, he's not vaccinated. I'm just going to start with this. Do you have any insight or understanding as to what the plan is here? Because Ross Atkins yesterday, speaking on him, I don't know if this was just he didn't want to weigh into it at all, and that's why he gave the answer he did, but he was not definitive in his answer about Merrifield's vaccination status moving forward.
And he shouldn't have been, because there are HIPAA laws in the United States dealing with privacy issues as it relates to health. And it is I'll say this. The Blue Jays as an organization have been amazingly consistent when it comes to talking on or off the record about whether or not a player has been vaxxed. They have been really consistent. Like, you have not, even off the record, been able to get from any of them, hey, is so-and-so vaccinated? That is a third rail. They won't talk about it. So that, I have no problem with that. I would like to think that there's enough of a relationship between Dayton Moore, the Royals GM, and Ross Atkins, that somebody, or between Ross Atkins and Whit Merrifield's agent, that somebody would have been able to talk to somebody, and that the question would have been asked to Whit Merrifield, hey, if this happens, will you consider getting vaccinated? Like, I really don't think that the Jays went ahead and made this deal and said, okay, let's see if we can get the guy vaxxed now. There has to be some sort of due diligence there. And Whit Merrifield has said of his own accord that he would get vaccinated. But I don't know. Avoiding that question, because it's a matter of public health, obviously, and it's a matter of public record, because Whit Merrifield didn't come up here. But that's been a consistent message from the Jays from day one. So, if anything, I'll give Ross Atkins credit for that. I think they're very consistent in talking about players' vaccination status, and I, quite frankly, have no problem with that.
In terms of acquiring Merrifield, how much do you think that had to do with Springer's potential injury, and if there's any concern that heightens because of that?
Yeah, I mean, George Springer's injury is what we're going to be talking about this all year. I mean, George Springer has told us we're going to be talking about it all year. He said it's something that's going to have to be monitored. I think at the end of the day, this is one of those deals when you go into the trade deadline, you drop a list and you say, okay, if if we feel at the end of the day, or if something happens at the end of the day where we need another bat, let's double back and talk to these guys about this player. And I think that's what happened. I just think the Jays went back to Kansas City and realized that they weren't going to, make any more bullpen ads once they acquired the pitchers that they got. And it's basically, let's cross something off our to-do list. It may not have been the first priority, may not have been the second priority, may not have been the third priority, but we can do it. It gives us something we don't have right now. Let's go ahead and do it. And that's, what I think it came down to.
Okay, last one from me is, what do you think the clubhouse is feeling right now? I know yesterday there's a lot of reports of the Jays sitting around the TV. They've been talking openly over the weekend that they really wanted to see who was joining the team, and this is kind of the haul that they got. Do you think that affects the team much, or are they able to be pros about it and just move on?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this group will, have any issue moving on for it. Based on the things they've been through with COVID and everything, I think they're a pretty resilient lot. I will say this, though, from spending a weekend out at the ballpark, there were expectations that Ross Atkins would do more than he ultimately did. There were people on that team who were absolutely convinced that when the Jays charter left Toronto after that Tigers series, Gregory Soto or Joe Jimenez or Will Vest or Michael Fulmer would be on it. H.A. Hinch didn't use those guys, most of those guys, in the final two games of the series against Toronto. And it wasn't all just because, the score didn't play into his hands. There's a reason he didn't use them. And, H.A. Hinch, before Sunday's game, was pretty open and basically saying, look, look at the Jays, look what they need, look what we have, put two and two together. So there was a sense, I think, on the part of people around the team that something more was going to be done. Now, is that, is it the clubhouse in revolt? Is the clubhouse as upset as it was in 2014 when Alex didn't do anything? I'm not close enough to the situation right now. I'm not around the team. I don't know. You hear whispers that people weren't entirely happy, but they're ball players. I think whatever unhappiness there was yesterday or whatever, I wouldn't even say unhappiness. If anything, it's probably more a sense of disappointment than unhappiness. That, that disappointment, as soon as the Drew Rasmussen throws the first pitch of that game, that disappointment's gone by the wayside, and it's game number whatever of the regular season, the first or two against Texas or against Tampa. We got a long road trip coming up. Let's move on.
Oh, I hope you're right. I hope they can just shake it off and maybe do a little prove something with the rest of the games. Jeff, appreciate you coming on, and we'll see you quite soon.
Absolutely. Take care.
Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff Blair, co-host of Blair and Barker, which is up next, and Sportsnet.ca columnist and our insider that was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
That was great. There are so many things that Blair said there that I think are going to have to be the real major questions for this organization going into this next offseason. If they don't manage to win a World Series this year, which, again, they still could, I think that the offense is good enough that they could get hot for a run. They could get hot for a stretch. I think that they have the starting pitching that, under the right circumstances, could absolutely shut down some of the best offenses in baseball. And I think that their bullpen, while not perfect, and I'll be honest, far from perfect. That's kind of the making light of the situation. They've been statistically, by many metrics, one of the worst bullpens in baseball this year. A bottom 10 bullpen in baseball this year. Not sure how much that changed by getting Bass and Pop, or a small run here the last month where some lower level competition, some lower leverage situations have altered the numbers. I'm sure that they covet their prospects more than other organizations do. I think that's natural when you know more and you've groomed more. you've done the development. You also have a track record. You feel more strongly. You have more conviction. But, yeah, fact of the matter is AAA this year has hurt them. Organizational depth at the minor league level has hurt them this year. They haven't had pitchers to bring up. When Yusei Kikuchi was hurt, when they lost Hyunjin Ryu, when Kevin Gausman had his minor blip, they weren't able to pull someone from the minors and say, don't worry, like they've got a guy in-house that can be somebody. It was Max Castillo, and they obviously viewed him, they viewed him as a guy that was expendable in a deal. They've never had bullpen arms that you could say, oh, this is an exciting bullpen arm that they're going to give a shot to. It was always Nate Pearson, for both roles, really. You shouldn't have one injury to a prospect that ultimately changes the outcome for your bullpen. And he was always a bit of a long shot. That's why I really wish they traded him last offseason because, yeah, now what is Nate Pearson's value? Like, you don't even think – he didn't even get mentioned all trade mm-hmm. deadline. And I don't even mean that, of course, because can't trade – well, not going to trade a guy who's hurt, but – wasn't even a mention of him in terms of, oh, a guy who could be coming back. Last I saw was a Shy piece from like 2 weeks ago mentioning that he's throwing from 60 feet, I think. I never know exactly what the...
I was like, speaking of Shy.
Throwing off a mound. He's throwing off... Yeah,
we got Shy at 9 o'clock if you want to stay tuned for the Ailish Hour.
There you go.
Just a little you plug.
Know, I think that most people stay tuned for the Ailish Hour. The only person that doesn't is myself.
That's right. You like, shut that laptop gone. Down.
Immediately done.
And
yes.
You're...
On to the day. On to the day at hand. I got a very adult day today. So, no, today is...
I got a dentist appointment today. Very adult day for me.
I think children go to the dentist, but sure, yeah. I think, I guess if you only start going to the dentist as an adult, that's very adult. You booked your own appointment? Yeah, okay. Either way, yeah, AAA is just, it hasn't been good for them this year. Pitching depth has not been good for them this year. And you have to wonder if that causes a bit of, yeah, I think by all accounts, Ricky Tiedemann is a stud. And you heard Blair say that he could be their next Manoah, which, wow, that would be incredible if they hit on another starter like that. But you at least have to wonder if their inability to hit with pitchers for so long and the fact that this guy's relatively close-ish played an impact in this. Like that there's an overvaluation. Because, yeah, if you're missing from a position, I think it can make it harder to deal from that spot. Of course it can. So maybe that was a part of this. Maybe that even makes it tougher. So, yeah, I'm going to stick with my grade because Blair gave it the same one, C-. It's one thing to say I'm wrong. I'm going to say Blair's wrong, too. It's tougher to do.
Rescind their text messages. Unsend them.
Yeah, let's see what our pal Blake Murphy has to say. He's next on the Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. It's the Fan Warning Show. J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. Shoot us a note anytime on the text line 59590 or on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus at Ailish4Far. Shoot a follow there. Subscribe to the podcast. Do all those things. Blake Murphy next.
Sportsnet 590.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money.
With JD, Blake, and Ailish.
It's time for the Wake and Rake. Brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. I'm JD Bunkus. Blake Murphy's here. Ailish Forfar's here. I texted a little with Blake after. I texted with Blake before and after the deadline. He was basically accusing me of being a bit of a Chicken Little ahead of his show about the Blue Jays deadline. I expressed my concerns. And alrighty, Mr. Wright. Oh, Mr. Wright was right again.
I was trying to prep for 4 hours of deadline radio, and I couldn't swaddle you and pat your back and try to get the burp out while you were all fussy. I was trying to prep for 4 hours of sitting there being like, maybe more news will come.
No, yeah.
Not my favorite 2 days of radio.
Yeah, no. I was fussy yesterday. I'm fussy today as well. We just had a great chat with Blair. We asked him to grade the Jays' day someone who was on television for 4 hours yesterday. Tattoos popping. Very like bad boy of you. You know, gone are the days of hiding your tattoos on television. Jeff Merrick would be very jealous of you.
It's just what I look like. I don't know what else to do about it.
Yeah, they used to make people wear sleeves, you know.
Like, I know. Like, well, have you seen that Detroit Tigers reliever, Anthony Lang, who's got like – he wears the turtleneck that goes all the way up to like basically his bottom lip? He must have something weird going on.
Yeah, that's – you know what? That's probably correct. So how would you grade the day for the Blue Jays yesterday?
So relative to expectations, like an absolute F, but like in general, a C. And I know that some people are a little lower on it than that. And no one wants to hear this on a day where it's disappointing. I really like Mitch White. He's a guy. I think he's a guy. I think you could build him into like a Stripling type of swingman. I think there's some stuff in the Statcast data and the like pitch mechanics stuff that like he fits the bill of someone they think they can get more out of. Same for Zach Pop. But Zach Pop and Mitch White should have been like, those should have been the last minute. Oh, also we did this and no one reported it and it's just a tweet. Those shouldn't be the headline items is the issue here. So C overall. I'm not a big Whit Merrifield guy. I think his best days are behind him. Sure, it's a little extra versatility. Sure looks to me like maybe a bet against Springer's health. Mm-hmm. But yeah, C. This is everyone around you got more better than you did.
I had a C as well, and JD and Blair had C minuses. So that's your report card. It's not great. The parents are not. You have to send that one home, and they have to sign it, and that's always a tough one.
And here, Ben Nicholson-Smith was calling me a tough grader yesterday when he threw at me like, oh, what if they also get Syndergaard, and I forget who the other name was. And I was like, yeah, B+. And he was like, he was ready to go A. And were the expectations too high. A minus, I think he was going. But there was someone
exact
else.
Deadline plus Syndergaard. Okay, yeah.
Syndergaard. Maybe it was Hap. I can't remember which name we were kicking around at that point. But
I know.
Yes. I was getting called a hard grader, and now C feels favorable.
Well, I can tell you a couple of things. Number one is that you can't find the Blue Jays in any trade deadline winners columns today. Okay, I searched.
You can't find the Blue Jays. Period. Yeah, I went through FanGraphs this morning.
Thank you.
There's nothing more damning about your trade deadline than you have to get 20 articles deep on FanGraphs the day after the deadline, and there's like 1 3-paragraph article about Anthony Bass's slider.
Yep, and I read it, and I thought it was a good article.
Yeah, cool.
I thought that the writer Jake Mailhot.
I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Big Mariners guy though, so
yeah, well,
get
guess
used
what?
To him because when the Mariners sweep the Jays in October, he's going to be our guy.
Well, I thought that the guy did a very good job of breaking down, you know, why Bass's strikeout rate has increased, what he has done with his pitch mix. It's, you know, normally, you know me, I see a graph and I go, I'm out on this article, you know, or I'll just scan to the bottom of that graph for the explanation on the graph. I thought this one was a good use on fan graphs of using graphs and using percentages. He also made me feel a little bit more optimistic about the future of Pop, given, maybe how good that sinker is. It's interesting when a guy throws a pitch 85% of the time. I'm like, this is going to be.
They're going to tweet that. He's going to throw, like, all the pitching mechanics guys on baseball Twitter, like Enosaris, the pitching ninja guy, they all think if you get Pop throwing a slider more, he's going to miss some bats. But, his whole thing is, like, all he gets is ground balls.
Yeah,
they
needed swing and miss. Swing and miss. Everybody said it. They didn't do it.
And got Super Simber.
Yeah, exactly. it was just funny to me that we talked about this for 2 weeks. Is you don't need any more Adam Simbers, and then they went out and got Super Simber. I do like that nickname for him. And that people went, well, he's also got a year of control. And I went, well, if you look at Anthony Bass's career, a year of control If we're talking about like volatility among relievers,
he was here
being
2 years ago, and they let him go.
Yeah. Anyway, they let him go for $6 million. You know, it's not like he got some monster payday. They let him go for $6 million. So anyway, yeah. Do I think that trade is a win? I do, because I think a lot of us sit in the camp of Jordan Groshans didn't have any room to grow in this organization. He had kind of peaked. He was on an extremely disappointing season, or having an extremely disappointing season. But yes,
I know people don't like the asset management side of things, but like Groshans was, this is his 40-man determination year. Like, you could have lost him in the Rule 5 next year, or had to put him on the 40-man to just sit there.
No, yeah,
that's why the Frasso one was surprising to me, because he had years before you had to make that decision, and he had like a breakout season this year. Mm-hmm. I like Mitch White. I don't know if I love that price, but
yeah. I was gonna say, I know that you thought the price for him was high, and I know that you were a Frasso guy. I always think Will Sasso when I hear that name.
Yeah.
That's all I hear is Will Sasso, and start thinking about old Mad TV stuff. But I think that pretty much the only thing that saved the Jays from an F for me was the Bass trade. I don't want to say one-sided, because the Jays did give up a guy who's clearly, you know, at least, at the very least, you know, top 7-8 in their prospect rankings, probably even internally too, despite the struggles. But I just think that, based on what you said about the decision that they had to make coming up with him, the fact that his track record was getting pretty lengthy, the fact that the pop was not there, that they had to move him to third base at some point, I just think that all of it in concert led to me saying, if you would have told me before the deadline that the Jays would do Groshans in that deal, I would have said, that's awesome. My disappointment and my C- comes from everything consequently, which is like, yeah, they just didn't do anything else. And maybe Mitch White is good. I really have to call it, make sure Mitch White, because I've already screwed up the name twice calling him Mitch Williams, but yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to call him Meg White. Get White Stripes going here. With respect to Groshans, like, I'd spoke to Keith Law and a couple other people about him, Ben Clemens from Fangraphs, about like just how all over the place that guy's value was around the league. And Ailish, I know you have Shai Davidi on the Ailish Hour at 9, and maybe you guys can go deeper on this. Wake up over there, sleepyhead. But he told me that he had a scout text them and say, like, what else is in the deal? Like, going to Miami, thinking Groshans was a light price tag for Bass and Pop. So this is always the thing with prospects, right? Jays fans had heard the name Groshans so much that it seems odd to get two relievers for him. And then other teams are like, this guy has a sub 300 slugging in a year where the balls are extremely juiced at AAA. Like, what's going on here?
Well, to be fair, though, there's definitely also, like, how many scouts exist? 10,000?
A lot. Like, you're going to find guys who like it, don't like everyone.
I was going to say that there's definitely a scout out there that went, all they got for Groshans was Bass and a middle reliever for the Marlins. Like, that seems light. I think it was a win. You think it was a win. A lot of people are looking at it as no, you know, cry. But yeah, all I'm saying is I'm sure you could find somebody that looks at it the other way too. Okay, so by the way, Noah Syndergaard did get traded. My theory for my bet was that you could bet the Oakland A's because they had a good pitcher on the mound, and the Angels probably wouldn't score a lot of runs. The Angels made even more trades. Hey, still won. They still won. Oakland mustered one whole mighty run in the ball game, which did not get it done. How'd you guys do?
I lost, but I also won in my heart, because I said plus money.
Oh, heart wins count?
I said plus money that I would be disappointed, and you guys both said minus money that you would not be disappointed with the Jays. So, I mean, I did win the...
No, I said minus 200 I would be happy. You misconstrued the question. The question going into yesterday were the odds of would you be happy or not. I said minus 200 that I would be happy. Blake's was, a minus 125.
Plus 100 that I would be happy, and I'm
so
Ailish unhappy.
Was the most negative about being happy. So she was correct.
I'm correct.
Is what she's saying.
No.
But I think as we did, minus 200 means it's favored. Yeah. You were favored
to be happy. You were favored to be happy.
No, I was favored to be unhappy. I viewed it as minus 200.
I thought as we were doing that exercise, you guys were maybe flipping it. But
We did flip it then. We flipped it.
Yeah.
We Missy Elliott it. We flipped it and reversed it. We got it wrong.
Well, then I thought
you Nurkic'd it.
I thought that I had the greatest. How do you explain this now.
You got to do another hour.
I won the listeners' money because I said that I thought I was going to be unhappy with
the
trade
deadline.
But the
listeners couldn't bet on
that.
Well,
no, I'm just obviously,
make money off of it.
Obviously, Blake, but I'm just saying that that is a win in my heart because you guys were all obviously disappointed with the trade deadline. But I put plus money on it.
I'm a big fan of when you say money that way. Money.
Money. Yeah. Guys.
Money.
It's all about money, Unibet.
It really is all about money. And then
Ailish, your actual bet lost. Boston beat Houston.
Yes, I'm aware.
My bet lost as well. Detroit won the game.
Three times. Yeah.
Pardon?
We've only done that three times, I believe.
There's a lot going on.
Detroit wins that game, and like you, JD, actually the opposite of you, with the bets on guys getting moved, Chafin, Jimenez, and Soto all come out of the bullpen in that game. So I should have just taken the 9-inning line, but part of the bet was I don't want to put any faith in the Tigers still having these bullpen arms, and then they didn't do squat.
My only thing if I'm a Tigers fan is, at least these guys will all carry the same value during the offseason. That if they want to make a trade at that point in time, if these guys all hold up, it's not like Soto's numbers going down in terms of return much. Maybe Jimenez, but again, he's an expiring contract that's going to be very, very cheap. All those guys are still movable in the offseason. If you're the Tigers and you didn't get the price, I don't mind it. The weird one to me was still the Orioles just going into full sell mode for nothing that was you have to do it. Prospects, it seemed, to punt sort of on being like they could have just been a little bit more. Let's go for it. Let's have some fun. We've been
Orioles.
Yeah, they've been
and
so
Trey
depressing.
Mancini means so much to that franchise,
yeah,
to that fan base.
Sad.
Like you hear the quotes coming out of that clubhouse after, and
not good.
I mean, good for him. He gets to play and compete for a World Series now, but that's got to be tough if you're an Orioles fan because he's like the guy.
Yeah, I think that the most confusing, I don't know, most confusing one, but one of the more confusing ones was Boston, where I just went, what? Okay, I don't mind. Like, I'm not saying about the whole buying and selling thing, because I think that the smartest thing you can do in baseball is not pigeonhole yourself and say, we are sellers.
Do you see the Bogarts quote, though?
Yeah, and that's
not
it.
Great.
Yeah, but that's what I mean, is I was a little surprised that, like, could the Red Sox get hot? Yeah, because we've seen it already once this year, right? They could end up catching up, and that Rays team stinks. Like, the Rays are finally caught up with being the Rays. You know, the team that spends no money and just goes all in on developing guys every year, you know, and somehow had a whole team of guys that hit 230, has finally caught up with them. You saw that yesterday. Gossman was lights out, no question. But he was also pitching against a bunch of guys swinging swords, you know? Like, they were playing Fruit Ninja out there.
That is the best Gossman has looked since, like, that one early home game where you anointed him, like, the must-watch live guy. That was filth.
Yeah, where I fell in love. Anyway, all right. So let's do better today. Guess what? Here's the spin zone. We can't do worse. You know,
that's true.
We cannot do worse than what we did yesterday. All right. So, Ailish Forfar, do you have a best bet for us this evening?
Yes, I do. We don't want to talk about Jay's Rays lines first.
Oh, we can, I guess, if you'd like.
No, mine isn't from that game, but they do play at 12 today, which is kind of a nice little treat. Early games. But I'm going to go to the Miami game. Mm. They're playing the Reds. Miami is facing Mike Minor, who has a 6.31 ERA, 1-7 on the season. Not great. So I'm just going to do the total runs Miami over 3.5, which I thought was pretty low when I first bet it this morning. It was -110. It's now -121, so a little bit of action on that. But I like it. I still think it's good value. I wish it was at 110, but Unibet knows. They know. So that's going to be my wake and rake pick. There's a couple good pitching matchups tonight, but I don't like this one. So let's bet it.
Okay. Quickly, let's just outline, because you're right, we should at least mention the Blue Jays line tonight. Jays have Yusei Kikuchi on the mound, and once again, the total is... Oh, no, it moved to 8. I saw it at 7.5 this morning, but it is now at 8 with -115 on the under, on the flat. Jays, -112. Rays, -104. Level of confidence in Yusei Kikuchi after one good start against the Detroit Tigers.
String it together. Momentum.
Okay.
Love it.
Believe?
Believe
Are we on Team
in
Believe?
These
Blake,
guys.
Are you on Team Believe?
Well, I want to believe, but he had he had three starts like that in a row in May, and then went back to doing all the stuff.
Well, then he can have
before.
Three starts in a row again, and this is number two.
Yeah, okay.
I still see TBD for the Rays, which is surprising.
It's Ryan Yarbrough as like the glorified, like he's started eight games but only gone like 40 innings or so. So I believe it's Yarbrough who's a lefty. So
it's now showing me Jalen Beeks.
Oh, okay.
Well, who's also a lefty with a 2.36 ERA, 50 strikeouts this year. So Jalen Beeks. So a couple of lefties on the mound. It's weird that the Jays just have this thing with left-handed hitting. I'm glad. I'm sure Yarbrough is going to get in this game either way.
Yeah.
And he's a guy that, for whatever reason, the Jays have had difficulties against. I'll never understand this element of this baseball team. If there's one thing that confuses me more than anything, like I can. The team construction we can quibble with. The offense is great, but how they have so many guys that struggle against dumpy lefties. Again, that Tigers pitcher comes in the other night from AAA, and you just see it where you go, can't believe this is happening again. The Friday game. Can't even remember the guy's name. Was there live, and you just, you know, basically shut them down for the first five innings of the ball game.
Was it Brian Garcia? Is that who it was?
I can't remember.
On the Friday game? Doesn't sound familiar.
Lefty from the minor leagues for the Detroit Tigers. But yeah, just
the guy.
Any AAA, any guys called up from Durham?
Will you do the show enough with you that I feel like I know some AAA guys?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true. So anyway, tonight, I'm just going to say it. Tonight's a stay away from me with the Blue Jays. There's nothing that I'm liking. There's not even a player prop that I'm enjoying tonight. I'm rooting for Yusei Kikuchi. I don't want to have to root for the over. And I'm certainly not confident enough, though, to be laying any money on the Blue Jays. So, yeah, that's going to be a stay away from me this evening. My best bet is I want to watch the Mariners and Yankees play.
That was a great game last night. I was watching that.
Yeah, it's a great game last night. And now we've got Luis Castillo pitching for the Mariners and Gerrit Cole. And I am a big believer in games like this. It's a 162 sample size. It's been done before. But I'm a big first impressions guy. And I think Luis Castillo heading to go face the Yankees in New York when his team is beat up and the offense is not fully there is like – how I'm going to view him come playoff time this year. And I know he's even gotten some track record there. But, yeah, Luis Castillo tonight against Gerrit Cole. I'm going with the first five under. I'm going to say it's going to be under 3.5 runs. I think it's plus money. Last I looked, it was plus 104.
It is.
I closed the tab to fly around.
Plus 104 still.
Okay, so it's still plus money. So I'm going back to the pluses and going against that Yankees offense. But Mariners are beat up. Ty France is hurt. They've just got a bunch of different players that are not looking healthy right now, that are not going to be participating in this game against Gerrit Cole. I'm going to fade the offenses, and I'm going to believe in Luis Castillo. I'm going to say that this guy lives up to it, that he embraces this moment, and he pitches well against the Yankees.
I like it.
Cool.
I thought we would have seen Judge get that walk off last night, and he didn't, so maybe he's in a slump.
Sucks.
Yeah, he sucks.
That's what I would say. He sucks.
Bet against him.
Aaron Judge. Does he suck? Yes. Anyway, too, that like if you look at, by the way, some
let him walk in
numbers.
The offseason, by the way.
That's right.
Yeah.
Great to
go to another AL East team.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Oh, man, please just let that happen. Anyway, yeah, track record-wise, there's not a ton there. But, yeah, it's two guys with ERAs under 3.5. Two guys, especially, Gerrit Cole can work a punch out, but Castillo's been great. I'm going to go with those guys. Well, what do you got, Blake?
I'm going to Philly and Atlanta, and I'm going with the first five under in that one. It's Charlie Morton against Zach Wheeler, not like a bonkers pitching matchup, but both of those guys have huge samples against the opposing lineups and have been dominant against them. So just a bet on that track record keeping up. Zach Wheeler has a 30% strikeout rate against these Phillies hitters, and Morton has like a sub 300 weighted on base average. So a lot of track record there for both of them. Neither of these offenses too intimidating right now. Obviously beefed up a little bit, but that's
plus money bet too.
Yeah, both of us plus 104.
Yeah, I wanted to go Dodgers because with the Vin Scully stuff last night, like it's probably an emotionally charged thing right now, but they got the win last night and they're in San Fran. Whenever they're first back in LA and there's a whole Vin Scully tribute or whatever, like I'm going to be so hard on the Dodgers in whatever that game is, because that means so much to that franchise and that fan base and that team.
It's also minus 162 for the Dodgers tonight, which is not a great price, all things considered.
Our parlay is plus 662 today on Unibet.
Okay. Oh, I thought you were going to say plus 666, and I was going to be like, this is a lock.
I don't like it. Really? I would be worried to bet that.
No. That's a lock. That's a locky lock. This was the Fan Warning Show. This was the Rake and Rake brought to you by Unibet. For J.D., Blake, and Ailish, thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.